reproach. She wants to know where I get or don't get my money, how I could ever afford a cocaine addiction. She teaches English to adult men at the British Council, but what do I do? She wants to see for herself what I do. The night she stepped out of her clothes and sat down, I thought she wanted to have sex on the kitchen floor. But then she stretched out, her watery breasts slipping to the sides of her rib cage like raw eggs, her stomach hollowing to make a bowl. With her scalp on the ceramic tiles, she closed her eyes and said, "Shoot me." It was dark. We had just come from outside and the camera was hanging around my neck. I looped it up over my head and, without taking my shoes or coat off, shot her. She lay perfectly still, her skin pimpled all over from the cold floor. I nudged her legs apart with my heel, the better to see what she wanted to show me. I got her again and again, kneeling down as close as I could, and each time the metallic sound of the shutter was louder than before and more mercenary. I shot her face too, then roughly flipped her over to capture her back because that was what she wanted. I understood that this was a kind of fetish, that she was no different from the Germans and Italians who wanted me to talk dirty to them in Arabic, insult them, call them whores and dogs. They wanted to be mistreated in language they didn't understand. I kicked her over onto her stomach, using the toe of my shoe like a spade. And she lay face down, shaking for a long time, but not from cold or fear.
Question: is it racist to believe that being sexist makes you more Egyptian? The kitchen is the only room in this apartment without a balcony attached to it, and he seems to feel safer there because of it. There isn't even a window. It is the darkest room day or night, closest to the hollow inner column of the building where the staircase winds around a steampunk-style elevator. Just an iron cage with an accordion door and all the dubious gears and pulleys visible. Every other room in the apartment is porous to the street, especially with the shutters thrown open like I have them. Light ghosts in from the backs of billboards. The honks of cars accent the rooms along with the brittle smacks of backgammon chips, the dry cleaner soap operas, the calls of fruit vendors and junk collectors, old men barking from minarets. And we are also leaking our private lives out, adding our commotion to that of the neighborhood. If the smell of onion frying at the Kushari place next door reaches us, so the smells of our lovemaking must reach them. The clinks of our silverware, the starry smash of a glass against a wall, voices raised. All the windows are open, so if anything went too loudly wrong, someone might come knocking. It's become clear to me that Egyptians are meddlesome, full of good Samaritans who love to hear a woman scream so they can swoop to her rescue. I remember at the Ahwa, when I made the widow comment, how the boy from Shubrakhit stood up in front of everyone and then sat down again, shaking with impotence. What could he do with everyone watching? Am I safer with him on the street than in my own home? Am I safer on the balcony than in the windowless kitchen? Would he have thrown a glass at me in any other room?
Question: is it arrogant to grieve the loss of what you never had? In the city, they sell a gram of budra for £1,900, but I can still get it for £1,200 from Megdi because I am that deep in his phone, have been loyal to him for that long. If you venture into the desert, the Bedouins will sell you that same gram for £900. But the trip will milk years off you. Over the sink, the American washes her face with brown sugar, and I remember my mother sweeping salt grains off the kitchen table into her hand with the sharp edge of a store flyer so as not to waste them. Before the mirror, the American smooths and curls her sideburns with a waxy-headed toothbrush, something I've never seen anyone do. When she takes off her clothes, she leaves them dead on the floor. By the end of the weekend, the whole apartment is littered with twisted, tortured pants and shot dresses, brassieres fainting over door handles and the arms of chairs. Yesterday I realized it is because she was brought up with a Mexican maid who picked up after her in America. As she's leaving in the morning for work, I wave at her from the balcony like a proper housewife, a fresh bride who soaks her skin all day in buffalo milk to soften it for kneading. I spend the hours she's gone watching YouTube videos, reading Nietzsche in translation. She comes back at sundown, starved, beat, defeated by the world. Some nights I hold her in my arms as she drifts off to sleep. Other nights I can't even do that. She's probably never met an addict in her life. How to explain to this woman the exhaustion I feel after a long day of not moving, not caving, not scoring, not shooting? When she strokes my cheek against the direction of hair growth, I shiver uncontrollably. My body is not finished with me yet. It continues to avenge itself for all those years of substance dependence. But because I don't explain all this, she doesn't understand why my pulse is so faint I can't find it. Instead of a left leg, I have a sand-filled sack. If I stand up too quick, everything goes dark. In the dark, is my skin still on me? I can't see otherwise. My nerves wriggle in the air, and pain. Does she know the meaning of that word? Pain. It's pain. I am careful to simplify my language when I talk to her, but not too much. Her range is odd, at times jejune and grandmotherly, at others formal, obsolete. She uses words like naughtiness and tummy, but beg pardon when she means to say what. When startled, she invokes God in the language of the Quran. When she curls into my chest, I want to wax poetic, unburden myself of every secret, but I know she will not be able to keep up. Misspells everything like a kindergartner when she texts me. I am careful to define unfamiliar words. Let me tell you a secret, I text her as her body sleeps against mine, her nose in my chest. I can no longer be like the fountain. The fountain is a structure that spurts water, usually in a roundabout or public plaza. It squirts water from several mouths. I feel that love should flow freely as water does from fountains. Let me ask you, is it possible to contemplate a thing, anything at all, without sadness?
Question. How long does a newborn listen before it utters its first word? I woke up to find he had tried to explain a fountain to me, as though I didn't know the word. He was sleeping with the phone still clutched in his right hand. I texted back on my way to the British Council saying, "Nice sadness, but don't feed it. Its tummy is holy, so it's always hungry. If you feed it, it will befriend you and will return every night to beg like a street dog. A dog is a four-legged animal with fur and paws that coughs when it wants to be heard. People put a string around its neck and walk ahead of it on the street. It is considered impure by some religious schools of thought."
Question. If your lover lives in a building grand enough to have a servant staircase, how long before she sends you down it? You are condescending toward the street dog.
Question. How many fingers and toes will you sever before you're small enough for a man to possess? If I had been able to speak to you in English, you would not have thought I was condescending toward the street dog. I can see it happening almost before it happens, all the ways I will be misunderstood. I am trying to express myself with the vocabulary I have in Arabic. I am stupid in this Arabic. A blubbering toddler in his arms, defenselessly drooling all over his chest. Meanwhile, he peers down at me from his height, his muscled tongue clicking, spitting. There is nowhere to hide. When I try to reply, I choke on the gutturals like gulp after gulp of sea-warm sperm. The boy from Shubrakhit leans over me, and his hair pricks my open eyes. His hairs are so curly they shed from his head, already coiled into a ball, no strand to speak of. I find these all over the bed and in the corners of rooms, like the souls of insects who've died on their backs. He doesn't say, you can't see your friends anymore. But after a full day of teaching, if I am late returning, or if I return only to leave him again for the bars in Zamelik or Café Riche, I know he will be waiting, counting every minute I am gone, chewing them like seeds. We fight often. I go out less and less. Have not seen Sami or Reem in weeks. My world is getting smaller. He doesn't say, stay with me or hurry back. But there is always a fight when I come home. Do you realize all your friends are straight guys or gay girls? He asks, and I snap. What are you trying to say? He lights a cigarette and ignores me. What are you trying to say? I shout. And he begins to get up slowly like an old man, leaning on his own thigh, squinting, panting, baring his gums. Are you calling me a slut? I shout. In the living room, he straightens to his full height. He picks up the red-legged side table, swings it as though to fell a tree. I duck. There is the sound of metal thwacking wall, solid, intentional, then a gape of silence. He says, look what you made me do.
Question. Which is more frightening, to wake up with injuries or a weapon in your hand? It's not my fault I don't speak English. It's not my fault my father fixes tires instead of teeth. He didn't leave this country when he could. He stayed here with the crooks and quacks, dentists whose instruments ring with tetanus, typhoid, hepatitis, men without a conscience who will rob calcium even from a corpse's mouth. We buried my grandmother without a single tooth in her mouth. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you hear me? Her lips were folded over her gums, and the rest of her, I can't even. My father is a mother cunt, too. But he's not a lucky mother cunt in America. He's not even a lucky mother cunt in Cairo. He's on his knees day and night, patching rubber and shubrachit because Egyptians like your father are in America. Because. It's because. You understand? Who do you think is funding this regime? Why do you think we're still in this shit? 6, nearly 7 years later, and you think it's an accident I have £200 to my name right now? Yeah, what you spent today on a Vodafone credit, what you spent yesterday on imported shampoo because you hate this country you chose to find yourself. I have nothing to offer you. What can I offer you? I bring you bundles of mint leaves because I can't afford the sugar apples you eat with both hands and drip all over your chin. Do you know how it feels, knowing I can't even buy sugar apples for a woman I love? Do you know what I do when you're at work, speaking English with the other English teachers, the blonde ones from London and Canada, William or Willem, who light up your phone at night, who you're probably fucking because you're a 10-pound whore? Why are you crying? Don't act like that. Don't cower like I'm about to hurt you. You know I'd sooner hurt myself than hurt you. I almost jumped off your beloved balcony yesterday. Don't you know you're the only good thing I have? That you hold spoons by the middle the way my grandmother used to? That in the hours you're not here, I don't get out of bed? Have no reason to eat a meal or change my shirt. If your father were here, I'd ask for your hand. What am I supposed to do to be enough for you? I don't speak English because I went to public school and nowhere shubrachit. Do you know what a public school is like in Shubrachit? She doesn't know. She can't imagine. When I was still in elementary, my grandmother used to come at noon with a bag of sweets to encourage me to stay the full day. They're not teaching anyway, I'd tell her. And she'd say, but maybe tomorrow they will be.
Question. If the beast is already in your house, does that make the wilderness safer? He cried. After he swung the table at my head, he crumpled to the floor in what my mother has been calling child's pose ever since she took up yoga. He cried, and I heard through the gasps, I'm not well, can't you see I'm not well? The first day he walked into Café Riche, I didn't notice the holes in his pants or the threads slobbering off him, the lipping sandals. He came in huge, with a stiff, dark-shouldered masculinity and whimsical bow tie. Then he refused to meet anywhere that wasn't the Ehwa under the bridge. I hated it there. Just plastic pool tables and chairs on the street, the asphalt muddied beneath us, weasels slipping between our ankles, the noise of traffic unbearable. We drank coffee in shot glasses that still bore the lip prints of previous drinkers. Then he rolled his sleeves up and I saw the scabs and scars up and down his arms, the twitching. He told me from the beginning he was an addict, but now I believe him. Now he is calling me a whore 10 different ways. And now he is crying on my living room floor in what my mother calls child's pose. I look again. Boy defeated. Boy from Shubrachitz with nothing and no one but me. He says he would have married me. How on earth could he have married me? I try to imagine him swishing kombucha around a glass with my father in what is now his permanent home in the Poconos, and I snort. He howls harder at my feet. He gets smaller and smaller, howling, "What's funny? What's funny? Are you laughing at me?" The boy has never left this country, never will. He is in child's pose, wetting my floor, offering me imaginary peaches and chocolate croissants. Why is this pity I feel so frightening?
Question. If an Egyptian cannot speak English, who is telling his story? We fall asleep in each other's arms. We watch a film together and fall asleep in our outdoor clothes in each other's arms, her scratchy head beneath my chin. The grief numbs us both. I find myself measuring for the first time how far America is from Cairo, let alone Shubrachit. How to bridge this ocean? How to explain all I left behind to get even this far? The mulberry trees, the microbus, and train. I dream of Megdi and my grandmother together in bed. He is on his back on the phone, taking orders, making good money. Meanwhile, she rides him like an unbroken horse, her house galabeya hoisted up around her waist. When we were still two, my grandmother and I, living in the house on the river, she'd come out of the bathroom after bathing, thighs blubbering against each other, and her smell preceding her down the hall. I'd pinch her where the meat of her belly folded over the meat of her thighs, and she'd scream giggles. How to explain the devotion between us? At some point in every country family, the son becomes the father and the grandson a husband. For the last 10 years of her life, I was the only male to see her hair, to hear her thighs clap against each other. When we moved in with my parents, I knew she would die. Every night, fruits were quartered at the table, father breathing over them, mother measuring. How could she not die? She who used to fold paper, she who danced with me in the room of cranes. I could not even close her eyelids. They were fused together from the heat. And how she kissed mine every night. Her lips were sagged in, as though sucked down her throat by too ravenous a heart, her gums soft as mud banks, tops and bottoms sinking into each other. She was the first of all losses. When she climbed into the stove, when she, and the smell of her, the wrong smell of her, dinner, and the house forever in the village. I untangle myself from her arms, go out onto the balcony with the bat-infested trees beneath it, and make the call.
Question. If you understand why a hound is snapping at you, have you already pardoned him the meat from your leg? I'm not stupid. I know the signs of an abuser, check them off a list as they flash by my window like 100 kilometers, 80 kilometers, 40 kilometers, 10 kilometers, we're headed straight for collision. How to say passive-aggressive in Arabic, guilt trip, victim complex. How to say emotional blackmail What is unforgivable in English and Arabic has no name, I know. You are trying to make me feel bad, I say, like a small hiccuping girl with sand in her eyes. You are no longer safeness, I tell him. I miss myself. He hugs me and I let him. On my laptop, we watch a young Mahmoud Yassin stalk Fatin Hamema until he possesses her in the 1971 classic The Thin Thread. When he calls the film a romance, I realize very clearly what he wants from me, and also that next time this boy from Shubrakhit won't swing and miss. What once was peculiar in him, charming even, is now terrorizing beyond words. It's not his fault. He doesn't speak English. It's not his fault he has no work. There is no work to be had. All night long, the downtown sidewalks and doorways are haunted by whip-thin men who abuse pharmaceuticals, make animal sounds at passing women. What do you want me to do? He asks. You want me to serve coffee at the Ahwa under the bridge? You want me to sell peanuts and tissue paper or earphones at Ramses? This country has milked the tits off me. You weren't here. You didn't live through 2011 when we really thought. And now look, is this what we fought for? Is this... Fuck. You blame me for not separating plastic from metal in the garbage heaps? You know how much a kilo of plastic goes for? I don't know how much a kilo of plastic goes for. And he doesn't ask how much the British Council pays me. He doesn't have to. We hide our finances from each other, but the numbers chafe between our bodies while we sleep, so that we wake up full of static, agitated, zapping everything we touch. I did not even apply for work at the British Council. My mother made a call and arranged it before I even arrived in Cairo. She was even embarrassed to make the call, to tell her former classmate Sherry that her own daughter, a Columbia University graduate, wanted to teach English for less money than she pays the maid in New York. My monthly salary is roughly what a dog walker in Manhattan makes in a week, but here it is enough for several months' rent. More money than he'll ever have in one go. But what can I do? Who is to blame?
Question. How long can you hate yourself before everyone else hates you too? I swear this isn't who I am. I'm not a violent person. But there's a violence that moves through you like a live current when you hate what someone has made you become. I feel estranged from myself the longer I am with her, made criminal solely because she is afraid, made pathetic because she pities me, a poor boy, though I never was. Of course, the end was always coming. But I never imagined it would be me putting myself on the other side of the door. Deciding enough is enough. Before I leave, I text the American from 2 feet away, where her body sleeps, warming the room with her breath, the laptop still open beside her with the film we were watching. Addicts, like grandchildren, do not fill their hours. They pull the hours apart, entertain themselves by melting the hours into new shapes. A ring, a gray braid down a bare back. Occasionally, the hours fight back with passion, so the addicts and grandchildren are transformed into the bleeding of a nostril or ear. Bleeding means the wasting of time. But it can also mean the loss of blood, as in, I bled from the nostrils. The nostrils are the two openings of the nose.
Question. If an ending is as wrong as you expected, were you wrong or were you? In the morning, the boy from Shubrakhit is not there. Gone, his cigarettes, his dear schoolboy sandals. My laptop gone. My mother's pearls. I check every room twice and under the bed. The side table is still on its side, in the corner, the red legs having left red streaks on the wall. All the breath I have been holding for weeks comes back to my lungs when I empty the ashtray, lock the door. He has spared me the messy job of getting rid of him. I close the shutters on all my balconies, blocking out the smudged, unclean sky, and remember how he predicted this weather. When we first met in June, he told me that every November the rice farmers burn their grasses on the outskirts of the city, and that for weeks it would blacken what should be blue. This is the first day I notice, or perhaps the first day they begin the burning. In the shadow department, I deep clean all the fabrics, scrub and sweep the floors. I rearrange all the furniture. It is 3 days before I finally text him back to say, "The nostrils are the two holes of the nose, and the word nose suggests both curiosity and snobbiness. And what is meant by snobby is the rice remaining on a plate at the end of a meal. And what is meant by plate is one of a pair of kidneys, usually the right, in the body of a woman."
Part 2. One shot, and I am like a god, headless, high as the cloud. I see two government informers on a nearby street corner making their waddling way in my direction. Footnote. Despite their efforts to blend in, government informers in Egypt are always recognizable by their state-mandated painters' mustaches. And I rumble under my breath, "Come at me, boys." There is one more gram in my underwear, but I am too tall to be suspect. I am strong, straight-backed in the ochre air, the roiling, hard-boiled atmosphere. I shoot finger guns at the sky. "Look at this, boys, how I impregnate the clouds with lightning." The balding informer, who is a step ahead of the other, opens his palm and looks up. Water is falling from the sky and drops the size of human tears. After vegetating underground for so long, a stranger to my body, I feel the need to flex a little, to stretch and be daring. Even my inner monologue is actively recovering its reach, catching flittering, long-forgotten classical couplets, country saws, profanity. Living with a woman whose Arabic is stunted, I never noticed how much I was mirroring her, walking on my knees so as to seem shorter. Now it is so good to be back to my full height. Somewhere above me, sheets of corrugated tin clash. The lights of the world flash on and off. The informers shrink from me in fear. What is the state before a man? Slouching one behind the other, protecting their faces with a pudgy hand, a sopping newspaper. They hide their long-nailed little fingers from me. Footnote. Just as the fullness and lining of a woman's lips advertise the fatness or pucker of her vulva, in Cairo, the little finger is considered a good indication of the length of a man's flaccid penis. Men with insecurities, sexual or otherwise, are prone to lengthening the nail of that finger to give the illusion of being well endowed. Later, they will go home to beat the fat off their wives. I pocket a couple gooseberries from a fruit stand and no one stops me. I high-five all the posters of El-Sisi, then wag my middle finger at his constipated expression. The ends of his lips turned down like horsetails. I hop onto the steps of a public bus and ride 1 foot on, 1 foot off, all the way downtown.
I Skype my mother at last. After months of evasion, claiming the internet was too scratchy for video, then waking up regularly to multiple voice notes on WhatsApp, each with varying degrees of abandonment hysteria, I called her one morning out of the blue. It was the middle of the night in New York, and she was awake with a bottle of Bordeaux, hugging it to her chest like a loaf of good bread, no evidence anywhere of a glass. I expected tears, the usual guilting performance directed at Chi-Chi in the corner of the room. "Look, it's my daughter who left. Just like her sister, just like my husband left, and now she calls. Can you believe it, Chi-Chi? Now, after everything, she remembers her own goddamn mother." But my mother answered quietly instead. Smiling, none of that. "It's good to see your face," she said. As it turns out, this is much more effective. I put my face down on the table. Not the red-legged one that a man swung at my head just 3 weeks ago, but a blonde dining table in the same room where I had sat so many times peeling tangerines with my leg extended beneath the wood, my curled foot in his two-handed lap. My shoulders heaved. Mother nodded, It was one of those ugly cries you don't want to see in the small, square representation of yourself at the bottom of the screen, the one you will allow only in front of pets and mothers, never males of any relation. When the boy from Shubrakhit left me, I celebrated his absence, closed all the shutters, and watched 8 seasons straight of RuPaul's Drag Race. I rearranged all the furniture and read Don DeLillo aloud to the houseplants. I ate sweating cheese slices and strips of pastrami straight off the styrofoam and didn't go to work for days. On screen, Mother was still nodding when I looked up. I stopped gulping just long enough to ask, "How's Chi-Chi?" before dissolving again at the familiarity of the living room halfway across the world. Somewhere off screen, Chi-Chi began to howl, having heard her name in my voice. My mother's face, my mother's body on the leather tuxedo couch in the silk robe that pointed at the nipples, with the wine she loves, with the enormous shaggy fiddly fig in the background. I said, "Mama, every morning the men splash water on the streets outside their shops." Footnote: the practice of splashing water outside of shops and homes is a cultural remnant of the Mamluk period in Egypt, during which streets would often become flooded at prayer times from worshippers performing their ablutions in outdoor fountains. Over time, puddles became the sign of a pious neighborhood, and to impress arriving guests, residents began splashing water on the streets outside their homes. Why do they do it? Do they imagine they're cleaning? Why is everyone wearing parkas and beanies in 80-degree weather? Mama, why do so many men grow their pinky nails to such witchy lengths? Do you have answers to any of these questions? My mother said, "When are you coming home?"
It requires elevation. There is only one point, from the middle of the 6th of October bridge, where trees do not conceal her apartment entirely, and visibility is possible. The easiest way to get there is to climb up the bridge from Abd al-Munim Riyadh Square, keeping your back to the river. There is no sidewalk, because this part of the bridge passes over only roads. Why would anyone on 2 feet want to go up there? The motorcyclists bully me for trying, since I am in their lane. My left hip is brushed by passing side mirrors and handlebars. When I get to the spot, I turn and lean against the railing to make myself narrower. I count the floors, 7 up or 5 down, squinting to see through the drizzle. Had she been an Egyptian girl, she would never have left the shutters thrown open the way she does every day. But then again, an Egyptian girl will probably not live alone downtown. She says she needs light in order to breathe, as though she were some kind of sun-eating rose, says she wants to let the sky into the rooms, says, "I'm not naked, what is there to hide?" Said, not says. She said those things once, murmured them early one Friday, and the shutters were closed because I had closed them the night before. They striped the high ceiling of the bedroom with the gray soul of dawn in infinite gradations. I had an ear between her breasts, and she was petting my head, but gently, the way you'd pet a sunflower, whispering, "What is there to hide?" Footnote: due to the fragility of sunflower petals, petting sunflowers is an expression in Bahira to denote an especially soft and cautious touch. And the doves that the doorman was breeding on the roof oohed back at her from their wooden cages, out of sight, and their legs were tangled like weeds, her heart whimpering in my ears. What is there to hide? How is it that the rich are surrounded by so much beauty? That hour we spent together beneath the heavened striations was kinder to me than 10 years in Cairo had been. Kinder, more merciful, as though I were a living creature after all, deserving of a gentle touch. But really, it isn't me. It's her. She actually lives like this. Everything from the shoes she wears to the soap in her bathroom is thoughtfully considered, has a touch of grandeur I can't explain. When we are together, some of that favor God intended for her rubs off on me by proximity. I remember that insane apartment, filled with furniture that seemed aware of itself, conscious of its signification. hand-woven kalims, salt lamps, calligraphy, plants in copper catch pots that dripped their star-shaped leaves over everything. She even had a government-issued sign for Sharif Street, one of the original blue ones, rusted now with age. It had clearly been stolen and was mounted in her kitchen above the sink. And it was beautiful, too. I remember how she fills her mornings with drums. Teneriwen, or El Sara and the Nuba tones. How she burns incense and paints her toenails and scrubs her face with brown sugar. When I bring in fool from a cart on the street for our breakfast, she won't eat it from the plastic bag. Footnote. Fool is a popular breakfast food consisting of fava beans, stewed overnight and seasoned with oil, lemon, cumin, and garlic. It is the only food in the Muslim world that is considered unforgivably offensive to consume with the left hand, due to its resemblance in color to feces. Arranges it on a flat clay plate alongside apricots that she has halved, topped with ricotta, drizzled with honey, dusted in pistachios, damn near deified before devouring. The indulgence. We used to sit in the wind of the balcony, celebrating the meal, me facing her. Her facing this exact point on the bridge where I am standing now, certain I will see her. No one ever talks about the punishing aesthetics of being poor. The shack on the roof where I have been living for years is more outside than inside. The floor is unfinished concrete, littered with cigarette butts, broken glass, and rat pellets in the darkest corner. The mattress is without sheets. The window is without glass. I hang up a towel by feeding its corners into the holes between the bricks. And this is how I keep out the sun. Every surface is clothed with dust. I've lived there since the death of photojournalism, since the foreigners left, taking their drugs with them, since the lines for gas and subsidized bread began. All these years, I never once complained about my little home on the roof. Only now, looking back, do I realize how terrible it is to subsist on just enough, without the joy of beautiful things.
Where have you been? Reem asks as casually as she can, and Sami smiles. I make some noises about work and don't explain. I spent forever blowing them off when the boy from Shubrakhit was around, because it was easier to drop my new friends than to fight for them in my own home. My punishment for this cowardice is that when he swung the table, when he left, I was alone with my relief and its complications. Even now, when I begin to think about sharing with them where I have been all these months, I am already tired, too disheartened to try. Where to begin, and will they believe me? Can we meet in Zamelik? I'd asked when I phoned Reem, and she began to protest until Sami cut in from the background. Yeah, I want to go to Zamelik for a change. Downtown is such a whore. He knows somehow, has intuited why I can't return to Cafe Riche, and would rather go instead to the expensive island where little dogs are walked by Sudanese maids, and the beggars sell roses and garlands of jasmine. We eat ice cream from Quedr, and then walk to Costa for coffee. We discuss how woke Solange is compared to her sister Beyoncé, based on their last respective albums, and I feel jumpy the whole time, looking over my shoulder like an outlaw. When Reem goes home, Sami and I remain seated over our mugs in Costa, and he lights me my first cigarette. I don't smoke, but I take it from him without hesitation. I've never seen him so serious before or so smug, as though he has won a bet with God. I wanted to warn you, he says, spreading his knees even wider so he can lean over his own heft. That khirti comes around Rish because I owe him something, not because he's clean. Footnote. A khirti refers to a man who provides informal services to foreigners in a range of capacities, as a broker, tour guide, travel agent, souvenir seller, scuba diving instructor, photographer, fixer, or pimp, for example. In Cairo, they generally congregate near tourist sites, such as the pyramids or downtown. The term is considered derogatory. Sami says he, and not the boy from Shubrakhit's name, to spare me the embarrassment. I almost say who, but stop myself. Lifting the cigarette to my lips, I attempt to inhale but end up dry coughing painfully. No, suck on it like a straw. hold it in your mouth, and then inhale. He instructs in response. Then he begins to muse aloud that romance in Cairo is unlike romance elsewhere in the world. He lived in London till he was 7, is proud of this, and so he claims he can compare. In Cairo, it's more like you're bored. Every girl you meet, you think, hey, are you my wife? If the answer is yes, you throw yourself at her feet. If she tries to leave, you chase her back. It's all life and death stuff, very dramatic, but also just a way of passing the time. Egyptian men were fucking loyal, and you should be worried. He plucks the cigarette from my fingers and raises both his and mine at once, so that they poke from the sides of his lips like tusks. He takes a drag, tilts his head back and exhales, enjoying every moment of this soap opera monologue. It's not over, is what I'm saying. Men love to save me. Men love to save me from other men.
Highs like heights. A good high demands to be experienced from a point of elevation, rooftops, balconies, bridges. I continue to wait for hours while the rain stops and starts and stops again. The traffic loosens its throat on the bridge. It's a losing game, this waiting on the smallest life sign from her. I stand long enough for my clothes to get soaked through, and then halfway dry. Long enough to remember the dialect of car horns a trucker first taught me in my father's workshop. Before the Gulf War, 18-wheelers used to drive from Aswan as far as Baghdad, and farther, sometimes stopping in Shubra Khit to get their tires patched and pressured. 2 long beeps, 2 short beeps, 1 long beep is a bridal celebration. Everyone knows that. But 3 short, 1 long, 1 short, you son of a fucker. 2 short, 1 short, 2 short, 1 short. I love you, or else, coming through, coming through. Does she hear talk in the car horns? Or does she think they are all just angry drivers, making angry driver sounds? Will I ever get the chance to ask her? Will she ever come out on her balcony? It's hard to know when to give up, cut my losses. The longer I wait, the greater the chance that I will see her. But the longer I wait, the longer I have been waiting on this bridge, and the higher the stakes are if I don't see her. It also seems certain, based on God's ironic bent, that she will appear the minute I turn to leave, and I cannot be made a fool like that. God is funny like that. He doesn't like me like that. I wish I had never come up here. It twists my brain to know she is somewhere in the world, breathing, making those little sighing sounds she makes when lost in thought, and I cannot know who, if anyone, is around to hear them. She is home, or she is not. If she is home, she will come out, or she will stay inside forever. If she is not home, she is in America already, at one of those exercise classes with her mother, or at a bar in Zemelik with the English boys, drinking her wine iced like an Alexandrian sailor. Of course she doesn't know how Alexandrian sailors add ice to their wine, or how to tell sea mullet from farmed mullet. Footnote. Wild sea mullet, one of the most popular fishes in Lower Egypt, is distinguishable from its farmed counterparts by yellow ears and an absence of mud in the gills. How to prevent thieves and stoners from climbing onto your boat at night. Footnote. The surest way to prevent trespassers from boarding a boat is to anchor it mid-river and braid shreds of aluminum cans into the anchor line. Or remove the fish stink from your fingers after eating. Footnote. Rubbing coconut oil on the fingers is the most popular Egyptian method. But in the smaller villages, and particularly Beheira, coconut milk is considered more effective at eliminating fish stink. How to harden concrete with sugar. How to encourage a hen to lay. Footnote. Feeding a hen a mixture of dandelions and her own eggshells, crushed and toasted, so as to be unrecognizable to her, will encourage the hen to lay. How to speak and eat with a defensive razor blade tucked between the cheek and upper gum. How to juice a lemon without souring your hands, using the blunt edge of a knife. She knows nothing. She goes to the market and comes back with Zebdeya mangoes in November, which she then tries to feed me. Footnote. In Egypt, Zebdeya mangoes are used exclusively for juicing, and, like all mangoes, they appear in the fall, and by November have largely disappeared from the markets. It was a fluke, her picking up the spoon from the middle, that first day we sat beside each other in Café Riche. There is nothing she intuited, no generational secrets repeating themselves through her loins. She's just as much a foreigner as the ridiculous Italians and Germans I used to fuck. She's drinking her wine with ice at a bar in Zemelek, out of bad luck. Or else she is at home, mopping the same kitchen tiles on which she once spread her legs and begged me to photograph her. What kind of an Egyptian would do that? Offer nudes to a man she'd known for 2 months? She could be all over the internet with those legs of hers. She could be on every porn site passed around the WhatsApp groups designed for this purpose. I wouldn't even need to name her. She'd be found out in days and dragged, humiliated by every level of society, strangers on the street, fruit sellers, shopkeepers, the doormen, her colleagues and students, relatives, every single person she'd ever met. I could have made her life unbearable, and she'd have no one to blame but herself. As usual, however, nothing bad has happened to her. With the same stroke of fortune that seems to follow her everywhere, her nudes aren't with me. My analog camera hasn't worked in years. A battery leakage ruined it in 2014. And no amount of surgery I perform will save it. She asked me to shoot her, so I shot her, pretending because I wanted her to believe I could. She asked me to develop the photos so she could see them, and I promised to, over and over until she stopped asking. I'd give anything to have the evidence now, to remind myself of that night. The kitchen tiles, her goose-pimpled thighs and macro. Instead, here I am standing on the 6th of October bridge, praying for a glimpse of her in the distance, clothed in broad daylight. At this point, even that would be enough. I don't need to reinsert myself into her life, so long as she is safe and happy, so long as I can know she is safe and happy. And if she is not, all I need is a glimpse.
I return to English as if to the arms of a lover and feel instantly safe and indigenous there. What are borders anyway? Just lines in the sand. What are citizens? Just people fucking within the same lines in the sand. And their children. And then their children. I tell William, who is standing behind me in the kitchen, running his teeth along my neck while I peel and de-heart late guavas. "So let's stay within the lines," he mumbles. "Stay," I say. "Egypt is the squarest country in the world," he continues, his heavy hands on my shoulders, making it more and more difficult to work a knife. "Only on a map," I laugh, "but the women are round in all the right places." I wiggle my hips to show which places. Then the guava juice touches my cheek because I'm melting over the counter. I return to English and find my quick wit there, right where I left it. I feel sharp again, like a toddler in its mirror stage, aroused by recognition. That thrill of being who I am swirls around my belly. William takes the juice off my skin where it shines like spittle, laughs at my jokes because he gets them. They are for him. I return to English and even my breathing changes. Little oh-ohs of ecstasy instead of ah-ahs. For too long I have been that other girl, weak, self-effacing, an obvious American in her fat-tongued, blubbering Arabic, and punished for it. But not anymore. It is in Arabic that lovers murder each other with side tables, and it is in English that they theorize about what it means to be murdered by side table. It is in English that they write about it, grieve and forgive, fuck their equals.
The end is also a beginning of rummaging through memories. I see her as she was that first night, the silk dress shining and cool, wetting everything it touches with its slippery tongues. I lifted the thing off her head as fast as I could. No buttons, no zippers or lace, but seemingly many layers, each thin as a lick. The distinct impression that I was unveiling royalty from the ground up. First the feet, thin and long-toed like hands. One of them pointing inward as though whispering to the other. A little higher, and the right knee stared stoically ahead, like the face of a king, while the left side-eyed it, pleadingly. When the silk was over her head, nothing but a brassiere and string thing barely there beneath. When even these were off, I could not contain my surprise. Palm-sized, watery breasts with high nipples, the aching gooseneck. Her down parts were brown and puckered, the way the mouths of grapes are when plucked from their wooden clusters. Footnote: using fruit, especially grapes, as sexual innuendo was popularized by the 2007 Shaabi song, Al Anab, by Omar Khayrat, in which the speaker is a fruit seller advertising his wares in increasingly erotic and possessive language. It is usually played at Egyptian weddings, along with Khayrat's equally suggestive Az Az Kaburiya, a song about sucking, nibbling crab meat. Swollen heavy, fissured around the edges. I took it all in with the light of the billboards flooding in from her many balconies, with the hunger of a man returning from exile. It had been 20 years since I felt home in a woman's arms, and the effect was one of outrage. Why had it taken her so long to appear? I have always been deserving of a first-class love, A-grade, elegant, not these sloppy streetwalkers with dirt under their nails and no evidence of skeletons, just lumps and folds all over. She is almost another species, so lithe in the lines. Lovely. With her, I felt for the first time that I was filling my own height rather than failing it. I was proud to walk beside her on the street and to see the tramadol dealers who know me by name, the shoe sellers and mechanics from Champollion, recognizing me for what I am, which is a category apart. If she knew, if she only knew how mine she is, how long I had been expecting her, she'd appear on the balcony now, put her elbows on the marble balustrade, and weep from the belly like a widow. Footnote: in Islamic metaphysics, the lament of a young widow is believed to be so impressive to God that he will occasionally revive her husband, granting the couple out of pity a few more years together. Burials are therefore delayed for as long as possible, and widows encouraged to pull their hair, tear at their clothes, and rub dust into their faces. She could be weeping at this very moment, out of view. My heart hurts to imagine. I was the one who left, after all, abandoned her in her dreaming, without explanation or goodbye. That morning I was certain from the position of her sleeping body, her curled back walling me out, knees to chest, that she wanted me gone. But now I remember how she used to walk past my chair in the dining room, sliding my head back with four fingers so she could kiss my brow, or else only pretending to, coming at my eyes with her pecking mouth, shouting laughter, playing. And I pity the missing she must be feeling today, alone in that apartment. How many times has she passed that chair where I used to sit? Do I have an obligation to return? To fold my body on its wood and explain?
Why, William? Such a small thing. When I said I had been born and raised in Michigan before moving to New York City, he raised his right palm and pointed below the thumb, saying, "Detroit," the way my father taught me to do in case I was kidnapped as a child. He should not have known to do this because he wasn't from Michigan himself. But he knew, both the where and the how. I was so grateful to be seen that my eyes watered. When we talked, I didn't have to explain basic concepts like yoga or sushi. When I asked him casually as a joke where he was when Michael Jackson died, he could answer. We were both in kitchens an ocean apart and heard it from our older siblings. What are the chances of that? He can be charming, entertaining. Not a big man, but a man with flooring BDE. An obvious alpha parting through a sea of minor men. Now he is asleep on the couch, which is as far as we made it. I leave him there drooling, British with British teeth, all of them fighting for front row. Enormous hands that are also purple, square-nailed, lewd as meat patties. We came to my apartment because his doorman won't allow it. Now that the fun is done, though, the presence of a male in my space is nauseating. I look for reasons to resent William's body. He wears white girl in India pants with elephants on them. He haggles with taxi drivers over the price of the trip before getting in the car. If the meter isn't working, he uses his fingers or types out the numbers he wants to pay on his phone because he hasn't bothered to learn the Arabic, despite living here for 4 months already. If the meter is working, he'll thumb out the exact coin instead of doing not the generous thing, but the natural thing of rounding up to the nearest multiple of five. Two taxis swerved off, one of them swearing at us. The driver of the third agreed to take us over the 6th of October bridge to downtown, but then wrong-eyed me in the rearview mirror the whole time, trying to figure out if I was Egyptian or not, if it was him and me versus William, or him alone versus William and me. I kept quiet, looking out the window while William big-mouthed in big English about Cairo Jazz Club, where we had just spent £2,000 on imported liquor. The driver gently turned down the Quran fizzing from the radio, whether to eavesdrop or because he was offended, I couldn't tell. William imagines at every turn that the locals are cheating him, which they very often are, and which he deserves. Locals, he calls them. He doesn't hear himself, slurring entitlement paranoia, a guest in this country, come temporarily, voluntarily, to shit in the coat closet, spit in every vase, accuse the furniture of imposture. And what are you supposed to be? He asks the hole in the bathroom floor. Footnote: with the exception of those at tourist sites and hotels catering to Westerners, toilets in Egypt tend to be squat toilets consisting of a toilet pan at floor level instead of a raised commode seat. Toilet paper is rarely available since Egyptians consider it more hygienic to use a bidet. Meanwhile, unlike the poorest fellah, he doesn't wash his asshole when he shits in porcelain. When he arrived at my building, I thanked the taxi driver in Arabic and doubled William's money once he'd stepped out of the car. £30. He came up to see my balconies, and that should have been the end of the night. If he hadn't thought to use his teeth in the kitchen, on my neck, I would not be stuck with his body on my couch now. This body that doesn't curl to protect its organs in sleep, but splays out like a crab, taking twice the space it needs.
After waiting for hours on the bridge to see her, she comes out at last. It is quicker than I expected, so fleeting that afterward I go crazy with doubt. Did I imagine it? Was I looking at the right balcony? It could have been a young boy on the 6th floor instead of the American girl on the 7th. The person appeared for about 5 seconds, with a mobile phone at the ear, leaned over the balustrade to look at the street below, then turned and disappeared back inside. That was it. I don't know how the idea came to me to call her phone, but I find myself calling, thinking that if the line is busy, it will mean it really was her I had seen on the balcony, and if not, then not. I call, as I have called 100 times since that night she first recited her number to me in Café Riche. She recited the digits singly, saying 0101812466, instead of clustering them like any Egyptian would, 0101812436. For the first time since then, her phone does not even ring. It appears to be switched off. I try again to be sure, but am met with the same automated message. I call twice more before my battery dies. 30 minutes later, at my ahwa under the bridge, I borrow Saeed's mobile to try her again. And this time, the line is flushed, warm-blooded. Footnote: in Egypt, an ahwa is a cheap outdoor cafe consisting of plastic or wooden chairs on the sidewalk or street, where you can order beverages and shisha. It is typically a male-dominated space. On the fourth ring, she answers. Hello? Hello? I choke and hand the phone back to Saeed, who says kindly, "You're lucky if your beloved is also your destiny." A saying I've never liked, and see more often on the bumpers of microbuses than anywhere else. Thanks, Saeed. He's wiping the plastic tables with what was definitely once a white undervest, his own. The down is hard. Harder than I remember. Quicker at me. As though this Palestinian budra were not cut with flour after all, but pure. Footnote. Cocaine smuggled over the border from Gaza is often cut with cheap substances like talc, chalk, milk powder, baking soda, or laundry detergent, but the most common is flour. I collapse into the plastic chair Saeed has pulled out for me, fatigued, my clothes still damp, suddenly certain that her phone was never switched off. She has blocked my number, as though we'd never shared a bed, as though I'd never rested my hands on her shoulders. She has made herself unreachable. I want to cut off these hands and throw them into the river. I want to die a blunt-edged death.
There is a difference between being poor and being cheap, and William is cheap, with delusions of sophistication. The hollandaise was just salad dressing, the bruschetta was ketchup, and they think fino counts as a baguette. Footnote. Fino is a baguette-shaped loaf with a fine textured fluffy crumb and a slightly buttery sweet taste. It is the number one staple in the Egyptian diet and is consumed at most meals. The shrimp avocado salad he ordered came without shrimp, and the avocado itself was so far from ripe it had been peeled and chopped like a carrot. William sent it back, and the server, bowing apologetically,